a very warm good morning on a very chilly morning.
Yeah, very chilly, a very warm indeed, but a very chilly morning out there, especially on the coast down there. The dips are stinking cold this morning. Anyway, yeah, our chat this morning is going to be on the power of attorney. You know, what is a power of attorney, and what type of power of attorney do you need, and when do you use a power of attorney? That's what we will discuss this morning. So the first thing is to the definition, basically, if one wants to call it that, of a power of attorney, is that it's a legal document that authorizes an individual other than the person himself, known as either an attorney or an agent, to act on behalf of that other person who furnishes the power of attorney. Mm-hmm. So known as a principal in specific matters, and or you can have it as a general power of attorney as well. In South Africa, the power of attorney is not just a legal document for attorneys only to use. It's an essential tool, if you want to call it that. It gives the right and the power to delegate decision-making authority to other parties on your behalf. And it's a concept that holds a significant impact because it can be abused so easily. So if you're going to do a power of attorney, you need to know that you understand what you are doing, why you are doing it. You need to understand the implications, the different types. Don't just do a power of attorney. You know, people download off the off Google a power of attorney, sign it, and, you know, the next one, oh, so-and-so's in my banking, so-and-so's in my house, so-and-so's in my this and that. You know, because you don't know what you've done, and you've signed something authorizing a person to do almost all and anything. So, you know, it's crucial for both the person giving it and the person to be appointed to understand their rights and responsibilities, and more important, to make sure that the document that you're using as a power of attorney is clearly defined and able to be legally upheld. In other words, that it can be interpreted correctly for use. You don't want it to be abused. So the most important thing is, don't just start doing power of attorneys. The common thing is for people to run in there and say, oh, my mom and dad are getting old, they're losing their mind, I want to look after their bank, I want to look after their house, I want to look after that. And they convince the parents to sign a power of attorney, and when you look again, one kid or some other person is controlling that person's entire estate, and the people themselves don't even know what's happening. So if you're going to sort out or do a power of attorney, don't see an attorney. Spend that money on an initial consultation, which won't be much. Let him explain what it is. Here at Alums, when we do sign powers of attorney, we say to the person giving the power, giving the authorization, is this what you want? Must it be immediate? Do you want us to hold that power in our safe until such time as you can no longer assist yourself? You know, often a power of attorney is done for people that are leaving the country and going to be abroad, and they need something done whilst they're away and that type of thing. Yeah. And the safest thing with that is to go through an attorney, let him put it into his safe and hold it so that it's only used correctly. You know, another one is that you often get a person that's buying or selling a house or something, and they need a power of attorney to sign documents for the, you know, to do the transfer and deal with it at the deeds office. Those are specific ones. Those are registered at the deeds office and remain at the deeds office. So there are different types of powers of attorney. There are different functions that it has and all the rest of it. So what is the best form of a power of attorney, I suppose one can ask as well? You know, you get a specific power of attorney, you get a general power of attorney. You know, there are different types of attorney, power of attorney that can be for a specific thing. Your special power of attorney is just that. It authorizes the person that you appoint as your agent to act in specific limited cases, in limited areas or in limited situations as declared or outlined in the document that is to be the power of attorney, that special power of attorney. So, you know, I, Peter Alum, hereby authorize Wayne to act on my behalf to sign documents for a property that I'm building it. I'm building and buying it since so because I'm out of the country or something like that. It specifies specifically what you can do. So it's crucial to understand what you're signing, what the power of attorney is being used for, you know. The other power of attorney that's most common, like I mentioned already, is one where people are becoming mentally incapacitated. You often get as well old people that no longer can get up and go out to the banks and places like that. So, you know, often a child will look after the parents' banking and assist them, you know, so that the child can go to the bank in place of the mother or the father or the parent, whatever you want to call it, where they, you know, they can still make decisions, but for example, they need go and do something specific at the bank, and you then authorize the person to act on your behalf. These days with the card machines, it's a lot easier as well. You can just give your card to somebody, they take your number and they can withdraw money for you. You know, you need to trust the person, you need to make sure that it's correct. Other than that, though, if you want to do your banking inside the bank, you would have to do a power of attorney. Now, the banks are very specific in that regard as well. They won't just do utilize an only power of attorney drawn by an attorney in some instances, some banks. They require one that they have themselves. You've got to go into the bank with the person, fill in the form, and get it sorted. So you've got to be very careful in that regard as to what's happening over there. So you've got to choose the right type of power of attorney. It's all on the principle of trust, as I mentioned, and you need to specifically address the issues that are at stake. And in that regard, I repeat once again, go and see an attorney, consult with the attorney who can help determine what it is. And I also say in this regard, you know, don't go to somebody, I'm not saying that new attorneys don't know what they're doing, but make sure that they understand the requirements, they understand what they're letting you in for, you know, and that type of thing. You know, you before you know what you've utilized it to make financial decisions on your behalf. It can be used to make healthcare decisions, help with business operation, managing people's business whilst they're out of the country. It can be used, you know, as I said, where people are losing their mind, elderly, where people are going to have an operation, where they're going to be in hospital for a little while and need somebody to assist them. So anything can be done with a power of attorney. It can cover most aspects of trade, if you want to call that by a person. And it's a power that you give to somebody else. A power of attorney doesn't mean that it's a power given to an attorney. It's the wording. It just has the word attorney in it. It's a document that instructs somebody that you trust. A lot of times attorneys are appointed, you know, as a safeguard in that regard. We do have our ethics, which don't allow us to do, you know, to operate on the and abuse the power of attorney. It is normally safer for an attorney to do it. So what is the position with regard to a power of attorney? Who can do one? Anybody can do a power of attorney. But at the time that you sign in the power of attorney, you've got to ensure that the principal has the mental capacity to understand the nature and the consequences and what he is entering into when granting a power of attorney to a third party. If, for example, the person is mentally incapacitated, the power of attorney is invalid. So you can't come along and you've got somebody where you do a thumbprint onto a power of attorney. You know, if that's going to happen, the Commission of Oaths needs to be present, needs to verify the power of attorney, state why the person could not sign. You might have a person with two broken hands that can't sign anymore. You know, you would then need the doctor's confirmation that they were present when that took place and that type of thing. So they are strict with the power of attorney, its interpretation and its signing. It must be in writing. You can't have an oral power of attorney. You can't come along and say, oh, I'm in hospital, I've been involved in a bad accident, I want to give power of attorney to my daughter. Pull the doctor in and say, I give power of attorney to so-and-so. It doesn't work that way. You know, they may be influential in convincing people to assist, but they don't carry any weight, and you can't use that. There's no such thing as a verbal power of attorney. So the person that's granting or giving the power to someone else to utilize or to take his place in stealing documents and whatever it may be, you know, the principal must be able to sign, must be able to correctly do it. And, you know, you also must understand that there is a right to challenge vague or overly broad power of attorneys. And people often come to us and say, you know, my mom didn't give my sister that power of attorney. We need to challenge it. And it's sad when that happens because, of course, family feud. And you know, it can be very ugly. So if you're going to do a power of attorney, make sure that it's done correctly. South African law does lay down the format of it, does lay down the clauses that go in it, the requirements for the different power of attorneys. You know, there's some that deal with real estate, there's some that deal with banks, there's some that deal with illness, there's some that deal with people with mental capacity, where they're losing their mental capacity. So the power of attorney must describe what it is and define what the agent is actually authorized to do by the party giving the power. And of course, you know, similar to what I've mentioned in the beginning, yeah, that the person giving the power must be legally competent. The person who's receiving the right to act must also be of sound and sober senses. He must be over 18 years of age and entitled to enter into a power of attorney. So you can't give power of attorney to somebody that's underage. Your 16-year-old daughter is the only person you've got in your house with you. That's not going to help because that person doesn't have the capacity to act and enter into agreements. You know, you need to be 18 years of age in South Africa.
Right.
So
right.
It can only be utilized if it's correctly written in paper, signed, and all the rest of it. Another thing that often happens is that people go off overseas on a holiday, perhaps get a job there and decide they're going to stay a year and they need stuff done back in South Africa. You can't just send a power of attorney over and sign it over there, signed in London this 7th day of July 2025, and send it back and say, okay, I authorize my son, you know, who's over the age and you know, able to act on my behalf to sign. It doesn't work like that. If it's signed outside South Africa, there's got to be proper authentication. It's got to go through, you know, the right channels. So the power of attorney must be done correctly. It cannot just be done. There's a specific section that covers the power of attorney for somebody out of the country. They invariably have to go to a magistrate. They need to get a postil and a postil attached to it, sign it and send it back to say that it's properly done. So, you know, it's very, very interesting, a power of attorney, not something to be abused. It can be used in conveyancing. It can be used in labor law. It can be used in litigation and all that type of thing. So a power of attorney is really something that's power granted to an outsider who gains the authority and right to make decisions and perform on your behalf. So you need to be very, very careful. I repeat that it can deal with financial management, it can deal with business operations, it can deal with health healthcare decision, it can deal with property decisions that you make in the buying and selling of property. It can help with you know, when you're losing your mind and somebody needs to act on your behalf for health reasons. So, you know, just make sure that if you're going to do a power of attorney, you know what you're entering into and that you do it correctly. I was saying earlier that it can be executed in another country. I think it's Rule 63 that covers that. The specifics that would say what must be done must be signed at a foreign place, I think at the embassy in another country, and then sent back and that type of thing. You know, and it's got to be properly done. It must be done before a notary public. Even when it comes from an outside country, like if you're going to be in London or somewhere and you need it signed, you've got to make sure that, you know, it's properly tended to like that. That's basically it, Wayne. It's a chat, so it's giving power to somebody else to act on your behalf. Strict rules should be applicable, and you need to understand and make sure that you know what you're doing. You know when you're giving power to somebody else. Don't just say, "Oh, you know, I trust Wayne, and he can sign on my behalf." Mm-hmm. There's no such thing.
Yeah,
you know, it's so easy to abuse something.
And Peter, what I've sort of taken from that is that, as you say, so easy to abuse. You've got to make sure that you do it right. As the person giving away the power of attorney, you're basically putting your life's finances and legal matters in the hands of somebody else. So you've got to make sure that person actually also knows what they're doing and is trustworthy.
Absolutely. It's a huge risk. You must make sure that person's trustworthy. I mean, you know, I often as well, I get people that come in here and they bring one sibling in. And I always say to the parent, do the other siblings know?
Mm.
Are you not causing a family feud amongst yourselves over here because, you know, you're giving power to a child? What about the other kids? Are they aware of it?
Yeah.
And that type of thing. So I invariably do like to ascertain that as well. When somebody's brought in, I want them to make sure that the other siblings in the family know and that type of thing. Because if the person, for example, is for health reasons, you know, often I get a situation where people come in and say, you know, my mother never discussed this with me. My sister just took my mother into you and signed a power of attorney. You know, without the family knowing, without us understanding what's happening. So, you know, if you are going to do something like that, make sure that the siblings know, that everybody knows what the position is, and there's no hard feelings on something like that. That's what you've got to make sure.
And, Peter, I'm just going to ask what could possibly be a silly question, but I think sometimes there's no such thing as silly questions. But, you know, when you've got a company that's got, let's say, two directors, all the decisions and things need to be signed by, let's say, both directors. Now, let's say, for instance, you've got an elderly parent and you've got two or three siblings. Is it possible to create a power of attorney situation where no decisions can take place without all three signatures? In other words, one sibling can't kind of go and alter the will or whatever might happen without the rest of them knowing it, you know, where everybody needs to, or let's say where you've got more than one person with power of attorney and all of them are required to be present or signed.
Well, it's a very intelligent question, and it's something that is not highly recommended because if you're going to, you know, you've got to trust somebody to make decisions on behalf of the parents and that type of thing. But I hear where you're coming from is that, you know, if it's a major decision, yes, there's no reason why you can't, you know, have something, a proviso that goes with it. To say that let's rather term it this way, that, you know, if it's just an easy day-to-day decision, you don't want to have a family meeting to make a decision. Right. But, for example, there's no harm in putting into an agreement that if, like, you know, if we get to the stage where we no longer can live in our house and the kid must, and there must be a decision made as to whether or not we're going to keep the house, that all the siblings will be involved and the majority will think. But that would be a specific agreement that you would have to make in addition to the power of attorney. The power of attorney would still invariably appoint one person, but it won't allow for you to start stipulating, you know, which matters must be dealt with at a family meeting and the majority must be gotten, that type of thing. So it's a very valid question. It's something that often does come up and must be dealt with separately. You know, you need to ascertain, like I said to you, the purpose of the power of attorney.
Yes.
We're dealing with property, you can have something like that. Where it's dealing with the day-to-day banking of a person, specifically not maybe necessary. Where it's a health decision, you can have it if it's like major health. If, for example, the guy's got to have organ donation or something like that. You may well want to do something like that. Day-to-day business operations, if you're the one partner and you're out of the country, you're not now going to say that a meeting must be set up beforehand. So, you know, it depends on what you're using it for. That is what's going to play a major role in the whole thing.
So once again, the situation would be, the best route would be appoint an attorney, get all the documents drawn up properly based on the circumstances that that family finds themselves.
That's absolutely correct. That's the best way to do it. Right. You know, go see an attorney, discuss at length why you're doing it, for what reason you're doing it, and then sort it out
from there. And Peter, if somebody wants to reach out to Alam's attorneys, maybe they've got a situation that needs to be dealt with, how do they get in touch with Alam's?
They can get us at 6 Tansom Road in Berea, the little side street where Pep Stores is. Telephone number 043-7211-018. Of course, the best and easiest way is just to go onto Facebook. Look us up, Alam's, at a SJR surname, A-L-L-A-M-S, and then you'll find all our details there. Mm-hmm. On Wild Coast FM as well, they'll find all of our details.
Great. Peter, thank you very, very much. Have a great week. Thanks for the chat. And we'll chat again next week, Monday.
Thanks, Wayne.
Cheerio then. Peter Alam with today's Legal Eagle Chat. Very interesting. Power of attorney and when it gets used. And